ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। One day, after a year after Krishna's appearance, Mother Yashoda was patting her son on her lap. But suddenly she felt the child to be heavier than a mountain peak, and she could no longer bear his weight. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lalyanti. Sometimes a mother lifts her child, and when the child falls in her hands, the child laughs, and the mother also enjoys pleasure. Yashoda used to do this, but this time Krishna was very heavy, and she could not bear his weight. Under the circumstances, it is to be understood that Krishna was aware of the coming of Trinavartasura, who would take him far away from his mother. Krishna knew that when Trinavarta came and took him away from his mother's lap, Mother Yashoda would be greatly bereaved. He did not want his mother to suffer any difficulty from the demon. Therefore, because he is the source of everything, janmadyashayataha, he assumed the heaviness of the entire universe. The child was in the lap of Yashoda, who was therefore in possession of everything in the world. But when the child assumed such heaviness, she had to put him down in order to give Trinavartasura an opportunity to take him away and play with him for some time before the child returned to the lap of his mother. Vidhayatam gopi vismita bhara pidita Mahapurusham adadhyo jagatam asakaramasu. Feeling the child to be as heavy as the entire universe, and therefore being anxious, thinking that perhaps the child was being attacked by some other ghost or demon, the astonished mother Yashoda put the child down on the ground and began to think of Narayan. Foreseeing disturbances, she called for the Brahmins to counteract this heaviness, and then she engaged in her other household affairs. She had no alternative than to remember the lotus feet of Narayan, for she could not understand that Krishna was the original source of everything. Purport. Mother Yashoda did not understand that Krishna is the heaviest of all heavy things, and that Krishna rests within everything, matstani sarvabhutani. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, mayatatam idam sarvam jagadabhyakta murtina. Krishna is everywhere in his impersonal form, and everything rests upon him. Nonetheless, nachaham teshvabhashtita, Krishna is not everywhere. Mother Yashoda was unable to understand this philosophy because she was dealing with Krishna as his real mother by the arrangement of Yoga Maya. Not understanding the importance of Krishna, she could only seek shelter of Narayan for Krishna's safety and call the Brahmins to counteract the situation. We are reading here of Krishna when he was a baby child of 1 year old. How Krishna is always meditating on the welfare of his devotees, and how inconceivable his divine plan may be, it is always ultimately for the good of those who are faithful and trust in him. In this instance, the one-year-old baby child was enjoying and being enjoyed on the lap of his mother, Yashoda. They were laughing together. She was patting him, and just like a mother would for a child, just seeing his beauty, feeling his softness, she was merged in an ocean of great pleasure. But this little child, who appeared to be most innocent and like an ordinary baby, how much does a one-year-old baby child know? What is the development of such a baby's intellect? They really do not know anything except the affection of their mother. But Krishna, although in this form, he is the all-knowing personality of Godhead, who is Abhigya and Swarat, who is all cognizant. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vedaham samatitani varatamanani chaujana bhavashani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashtana. That I know everything that's happened in the past, I know all that is happening now, and I know all things that are yet to come. Krishna knows everything. Sarvasya cha ham hridishani vashto matasmatir jnanam apohanam cha. Vedaisya sarvera ham eva vejo vedantik ridveda vedeva cha ham. Not only does he know everything, but everything anyone knows is only coming from him. He is the source of everyone's remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He is seated within the heart of every living being. There is the kshetra, kshetrabhya. It describes in the Bhagavatam that there is the field of activity, there is the knower of the field of activities, but Krishna, the Paramatma, is the knower of all knowers and the knower of all fields. His knowledge is infinite and all-pervasive. And all of these qualities were seated right in the lap of Mother Yashoda in the form of apparently ordinary little baby that really knows nothing except the affection of mother. You see babies in this world, when they start learning things, they point their fingers and this, and everyone laughs. They're starting to recognize what is what. Krishna was also doing like that, pointing, they are beginning to know, this is mother, this is father, this is dog, this is cow. He was pretending to be like this, like an ordinary baby, just for the pleasure of his parents, so they could love him with such affection, vatsalya ras. But Krishna, he knew that a great demon was coming to Vrindavan, Trinavarta, very terrible demon, such a terrible demon. Tomorrow we will read about this demon. He was coming for the purpose of killing Krishna and destroying all of Brajadham, all the cows, all the gopis, all the gopas. His plan was just to create complete destruction in the form of a whirlwind. You know what happened in Bangladesh when that cyclone hit last year? How many hundreds and thousands of people were killed? How many homes were destroyed? How many agricultural fields were completely devastated? Billions of dollars worth of damage. The whole world was just looking on with awe and reverence what to do. Even Mother Teresa, who is such a compassionate servant of people who are suffering, she went there and she told one of our devotees that, I have never seen such misery and devastation in all of my life. and it was caused by a wind. But this Trinavarta, he was a asura wind. He wasn't just a wind. He was a cyclone that had potency and power far greater than what we have seen through the ordinary occurrences of material nature. And he came to Vrindavan. And before any indication that he was coming, Krishna understood that if Mother Yashoda is holding me when this asura Trinavarta comes, then it will be very inconvenient for her. She will personally be very much injured. Huh? And she may be injured, and such physical and mental pain will take place. So somehow or other, I'm going to kill this demon, and I don't want to cause unnecessary suffering to my mother. So I have to arrange immediately, because the demon's on his way, I have to arrange immediately that she puts me down. Huh? And then if she goes on with her business and she's nowhere near the scene, then when the demon comes in a few seconds, then it will not be too much disturbance. I will protect her. So how to do? Mother was so affectionate. The least thing in the world she wanted to do was put Krishna down. And Krishna didn't know how to talk at that time. So he could not say, Mother, put me down. So he had to figure out a way to convince her to put him down. So Krishna is expert at figuring out ways. He is supreme in every regard. So he simply became heavier than the entire universe. That's all. For Krishna, it's no problem. Anato aniyan mahato mahiyan. He is larger than the largest. He is smaller than the smallest. If he wants, he can take the form of a little baby, lighter than a feather. If he likes, he could take the form of the Virat Rupa, which he exhibited to Arjuna, which was devouring practically all the planets in the universe, all the demigods, everyone. It's the same Krishna, no difference. Krishna's Swarat. He's independent to be whatever he wants to be. We are not like that. We are forced to be what we are. By our misuse or proper use of independence, we can change our destiny. But if you're old, you're old. Is there any question, oh, I want to become young? And if you're young, you're young. You have to wait for the process of time to make you old if you want to get old. And if you want to be young physically, then you have to wait till the process of death takes place and take another birth and be young. Ah, so in this way, we are very much bound by the laws of nature. We are not independent. Just like some of our devotees are not very lean and thin. They're very heavy. And it is not healthy spiritually to be heavy, nor is it healthy physically. So some of our devotees, they want to lose weight. But what do they have to do to lose weight? Oh, they have to stop eating so much prasad. That's a very difficult thing. Usually they can't do it. They're just, if they want to do it, they have to start fasting. They have to start eating very, very simple foods. They have to start getting much more exercise and all these things. And even after doing all these things, it may take months and months and months before they lose anything. Huh? And if a devotee is too thin, so he has to force himself to eat more and more and more, and maybe he will gain some weight. That is just amongst us, amongst all human beings. This is the way life is. But Krishna, if he wants to be light, he instantly becomes lighter than the air. And if he wants to be heavy, even in a form that is only maybe 1.5 feet high, how big is a one-year-old baby? Maybe 1.5, 2 feet, the most. Even in that form, he assumed the weight of becoming heavier than the entire universe. How much do you think the universe weighs? Huh? It cannot be calculated by our estimations. That means all the planets, the sun, everything. Vishnu has assumed the weight of the entire universe. So naturally, Mother Yashoda, she was a loving gopi. She could not tolerate holding him. So she placed him down. And she was thinking, why has he become so heavy? Why is he as heavy as the universe? She became anxious. And she thought, maybe he's being attacked by some ghost or some demon. That's why he's becoming so heavy. So she started to meditate on Lord Narayan. And she called the Brahmins to begin to chant various mantras and perform different types of pujas to get to scare ghosts away and demons and to protect the child for whatever it may be. And she had faith. She knew, if I remember Narayan and call these, of course, the Brahmins of Vrindavan were not smarta Brahmins. They were pure Vaishnava Brahmins. They were pure Vaishnavas who knew everything in regard to how to purify whatever situation a person was in. So she had faith in the devotees, the Brahmins, and she had faith in Narayan. So she decided, my child is now in proper care, and I will proceed to perform my household activities. So many duties I have for Krishna. And she laid Krishna down. Krishna, he was just waiting for this demon to come, so he could perform another wonderful lila for all the world to see. So in this way, the great opulence of the supremacy of Krishna is understood, that God is always God. Sometimes the lesser intelligent class of transcendentalists, they claim that through the process of mysticism, through the process of cultivation of knowledge, or sometimes even through the process of devotional service, what they would call bhakti, you can ultimately purify yourself and come to your original position to be God, to be Bhagavan, to become one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here we find that Krishna is not that type of God. You may try to be that type of God, but Krishna is not like that. Krishna, from his very infancy, was all-knowing, had complete supreme power over all living beings and all creation. The jiva can never become God. The jiva may be able to exhibit certain symptoms of mysticism, may be able to exhibit certain symptoms of emotions, but that is a different thing. Still, we are jivas. We are infinitesimal subordinate parts and parcels of Lord Sri Krishna. And ultimately, Krishna always proves his supreme power over all living beings. There is a story of one very crazy fellow of the name of Pondraka. And he was also a great powerful mystic. And he became so infatuated by his powers and by his good intelligence and by his tremendous influence over others. People, he had such influence over others' lives that people worshipped him and glorified him as God. So he actually believed that he was God. Bhagwan, Vasudev. So when he heard that Krishna was living in Dwarka and that was accepting such worship, he became very angry. He said, he sent a letter to Krishna through a messenger that you are bogus, you are trying to imitate me. I am the Supreme Vasudev. If you don't give up the symbols of my symbols, and if you don't give up the the worship and the adoration of the Supreme Godhead, then I will have to come and kill you. And of course, Krishna sent a letter back that, come and kill me, rascal. See what you can do. Huh? So Pondraka came. And when Krishna saw him in the dress of Narayan, what did Krishna do? Who knows? He laughed. He simply laughed. What a crazy fellow. To the people of the world, he was a very powerful conqueror, mystic, influential, very wise. But when Krishna saw him, he simply laughed. Krishna saw just a foolish, ignorant, tiny little infinitesimal jivatma, trying to imitate. So Krishna, he was God. Even before his own birth, he exhibited his supreme opulence. He appeared outside of the womb of Devaki and Vasudeva in his beautiful four-armed form, just to show the world that I'm not going to become God. God is always God. Bhagavan is always Bhagavan. And therefore, those who actually understand the truth, Vedaishta Sarveraham Eva Vedyo Vedanta Kripede Vedeva Jaham. All the Vedas are only to know Krishna. And Krishna is the ultimate compiler of all the Vedas. What are the Vedas? The Vedas is Krishna, through the hands of his empowered incarnation, Vyasadeva, simply revealing to the world all his own glories and the various means by which every class of people can gradually approach him and surrender to him. The Vedas deal with so many subject matters, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Astanga Kanda. They're all within the Vedas. But Krishna says, and these are all different types of dharma. But Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya, mamekam sharanam braja. That you just abandon all these various types of dharma or religions and surrender to me. That is the conclusion of all knowledge. Traigunya vishaya veda nistai guna bhavarjuna. Nirdvandvo nitya sattvisto nir yogakshema atmavan. Krishna says that the Vedas and all the religions of the world, they mainly deal with the three modes of material nature, gradual elevation and purification of consciousness. But Krishna says, just forget all these things and just surrender to me. Be established in the Supreme Self. Engage in my loving devotional service. Worship me with all your hearts. So in order to establish this principle, Krishna has appeared in such a wonderful way. And he is performing such wonderful, wonderful pastimes. Ultimately, through this lila, Krishna wants to kill the whirlwind of our own restless mind by attracting the mind to always think of him with love. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there any questions? Because when we become sincere devotees of the Lord, Krishna takes personal care for us. Now, we have so much karma to assume. But Krishna is the supreme controller. For a materialistic person, Krishna in no way intervenes or interferes. If a person is surrendering to material nature, Krishna simply allows that person to utterly enjoy and suffer the reactions of karma, with no interference whatsoever. Huh? But when one turns to Krishna with a sincere, honest heart, comes to his pure devotee to seek shelter, then Krishna takes special attention to do whatever is required to help that person become purified. Now, we have so much karma that is our due. Krishna may, whatever of that karmic reaction is good for us to suffer, Krishna lets it come upon us. Huh? He may intervene to the extent of just putting us in situations that we are not at all responsible for as far as karma, if that's what will help us best become Krishna conscious. Or he may understand that I will allow this karmic reaction, it will be good for him. Let him go through the cycle of this. It will help him come to me. Huh? So therefore it is said in Bhagavatam, Tathenu kampam shushamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipagam rigdhagva purvir vidadam namaste jivetya mukti pade sataya bhak. That a devotee, when he goes through terrible sufferings, he thinks that my karma, what I have done, I deserve so much worse. So much worse. But Krishna is so kind, he's just giving me a little sample of it, just to purify my heart, just to bring me closer to him. And therefore, such a devotee with folded palms is grateful and offers obeisances to Lord Sri Krishna. So every situation, Krishna is personally orchestrating to help us come closer to him, to help us take shelter of him, to help us to give up all faith in all of our material pursuits and all of the illusions of Maya. Huh? Suffering is good in that sense. Because we have so much faith and so much hope in the promises of this illusory energy, do we not? And as long as we have faith in Maya, we cannot put our complete faith in Krishna. So Krishna has to burn out all trust in all the entire illusory energy and all of Maya's representatives on earth. Right? We have to have complete, no faith in that anymore. So that we can put all that faith in Krishna. You can have compassion for such people, but no faith. You can understand that I must do my duty in this world, but you have no faith in any of these worldly goals. You don't give them any value, save and except how they can be utilized in Krishna's service. But now we are thinking so many materialistic arrangements are going to protect me from danger and pain. Huh? Isn't that true? Krishna has to break all that faith so that we understand that even through material circumstances, it is only Krishna that is our protector. He may protect in this way or that way, but it is Krishna. Keep my mind always fixed and focused on Krishna. So Krishna puts us sometimes through sufferings, pains, great difficulties, out of his love, out of his mercy, to break our faith in our material ambitions, in the promises of Maya, and to give us the opportunity to completely repose our faith and affection in Krishna, in Krishna alone. So if we understand that this is why everything is happening, we will be very grateful and thankful and offer our obeisances to Krishna in every situation of life. That is what it means to be more humble than a blade of grass. To accept that I do not know, Krishna knows. To accept his authority. That is real humility. When Krishna says, be humble more than humble than a blade of grass, he's speaking about this type of real humility. He's not speaking of external showmanship. Krishna's in your heart. Do you think he's impressed by your external showmanship? You may convince the whole world that you're more humble than a blade of grass. But if you do not convince Krishna, then what advancement will you make? What is the use of your humility? Your humility is only a disguised form of false pride, right? To be proud of being humble is pride. It's not humility. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupashate tesham nitya vayuktanam yogakshemam bahamya. Krishna says, for my devotee who is honestly and sincerely surrendering according to his capacity, I preserve what he has and I carry what he lacks. You just surrender according to your capacity and leave the rest to Krishna. Do you think he will abandon you because there is some impurity left in your heart? If you are clinging to that impurity, then you may have to take another birth to be washed of it. But if you are honestly struggling to give up these impurities, then Krishna can do whatever he wants. He could arrange a certain type of death that in the process of that death, whatever impurities are still left are washed away. Krishna can do anything for his devotee. Just have faith, have trust. It's not by your endeavors alone that are going to make you purified of all material attachments. It's only by the mercy of Krishna. So just strive according to your capacity to please Krishna. That's all. Don't worry about anything else. Any other questions? Dayal Chandra Prabhu. Who are you talking about? Relatives. You are on a different track. See, the track you were on was about to be derailed. You read about the derailing of that train in the papers the other day? So now you are on the track that will not be derailed. You are on the Krishna's Express, back home, back to Godhead. So if you know you're on a track that's going to be derailed, why should you stay on that train? Why not get on the train that you know will take you back home, back to Godhead? And if these people do not want you, if these people want you to stay on that train, does that mean you should stay? You should convince them to come on the other? So don't worry about such things. You see, every person, according to the three modes of material nature he is surrendering to and being influenced by, will have a different idea of what is truth, what is happiness, and what is the proper way of life. A person in the mode of ignorance, I mean, I don't know if you know these types of people, but I meet all sorts of people. A person in the mode of ignorance, I mean, I've met so many people. If you're not taking drugs, and if you're not taking drugs and just being stoned out day and night, you're crazy, you're weird, you're strange, you don't know how to live. And if you stop taking drugs, people will think this man is becoming brainwashed. He's just living like an ordinary foolish person in this world, like a zombie, not experiencing the higher stages of consciousness. People are like that. Eating meat is in the mode of ignorance, you know, tamaguna. People who eat meat, as far as they're concerned, if you don't eat meat, not only can you not enjoy life, but you're going to die of malnutrition. You won't get proteins, right? They can't even imagine how a person can survive without eating meat. In the West, when I was teaching vegetarian cooking classes, people would say, "Well, what do you eat? What can you cook? Meat is 99% of all foods. How many things can you cook in so many weeks of classes? You just stir vegetables a different way every week, huh?" As far as they're concerned, because they're completely under the influence of the mode of ignorance, they cannot conceive of happiness or even existence without meat. Right? Have you met such people? It is a fact. And people in the mode of passion, more and more and more money. They think, if you don't have money, if you don't have lots of money, how can you survive? If you're not working 9 to 5, what will you do? You'll be crazy. If you're not having nice sex life. People are really like this. I remember some of the biggest, most highly professional, highly paid, highly educated doctors in all of America. They were saying that if you do not have healthy sex, you cannot physically live. It's not possible. And there's so many books have been written by big, big psychiatrists and psychologists about the need for a lot of sex life to relieve physical and mental depressions. Huh? One devotee was very, this one lady devotee, she was very much feeling mental depression. So she went to a psychiatrist, very, very famous, high-paid psychiatrist. He said, what you need is more sex. And she looked at him and he said, and you know, I'm here to help you. She took her in the back room. There was a couch. Said, come, I will help you. After all, you have paid me, so I must give you full service. And she ran away. She realized that better to chant Hare Krishna. He was not simply trying to exploit and cheat her, but he was actually convinced. Person in the mode of passion, as far as he's concerned, sex life, family life, lots of money, unless you're like that, you cannot be happy. You're living an illusion, right? People who are completely infatuated by caste consciousness think, oh, if everything is for the caste, all truth, all knowledge, all goals of life are included within this only. Huh? So according to our particular modes of nature, we see the whole world. We have different values of what is truth, what is happiness, and what is the goal of life. Huh? So therefore, we have to understand that materialistic people are always going to think that we're crazy if we take to Krishna consciousness. So what do we have two choices. Either make them Krishna conscious, and then they'll be satisfied, or just go on with your Krishna consciousness and pray for their souls. But we cannot be affected by what they say. They'll never be happy until we're just like them. And even if we're just like them, they're still not happy because the three modes of material nature are still causing them suffering. Right? I remember my father said to me, if only you would just leave this movement and become and take over my business, I would be so happy and be like everyone else. I said, well, when I was a little boy, I was like everyone else. And I never saw you happy then, so why do you think it's going to make it different now? You're just as miserable you always were. The only difference is you're just miserable about something else, right? But at least this misery is causing you to think of Krishna. All your other miseries is only in complete illusion. Huh? So gradually he became a Krishna conscious through this process of being in anxiety thinking of Krishna. After 20 years, he became a devotee. Now he's happy. Huh? So have faith. It's no problem. Yes? Any other questions? Ananda Vrindavan. You cannot understand Lord Chaitanya in truth unless you understand according to the process he has given us. Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and the acharyas in this line are explaining the truth of Lord Chaitanya, his real tattva. Huh? You see, they do not accept that Lord Chaitanya was actually God, that he was Krishna in the mood of Sri Radharani. Therefore, they think he was just a devotee, and we can become like that. We can attain that stage. Huh? But Rupa Goswami has revealed to us that you can never attain that stage. He is in the stage of Mahabhav. No living being can attain the stage of Mahabhav. That is the priority of Srimati Radharani alone. And he was tasting the sweetness of the love of Sri Radha. Now factually, all of the gopis are crying out for Krishna. It is not that they don't have that relationship with Krishna. But they are crying out for Krishna through this.